Blog Talk Radio.
Do one at a time.
It went by so fast, I'm still a day behind. I didn't realize today was Friday until my wife told me about afternoon. So that was crazy. But, you know, that's okay.
You've been busy with lots of family and stuff?
Well, yes and no. This week I'm just somewhat taking it easy because it was a hell of a run the last month or so, you know, with the holiday and everything else that comes in between.
So tell us, George, you wanted to update us on your friend John Ford. I really know very little about him other than what you have told me. But
can you share it with our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I have to say that in the early 90s. I switched my studies over to the UFO field, and it was a little bit before that, maybe about 1988. And I met a lot of people along the way, and a lot of different researchers and organizations. And there was one fellow, John Ford, who had the MUFON, Long Island UFO organization, which he started out with Richard Stout years ago. And it's been a hell of a relationship, I have to say. And to make a long story short, John was involved with a couple of UFO crashes. And one crash, I guess, got him in hot water. He ended up in the in jail. And before you know it, he ended up in a state mental hospital, locked away for the rest of his life. You know, is insane. Or, you know, unable to stay in trial. But, you know, it's just a history, a story, on what happens sometimes when things go bad. And, you know, you've heard stories about people who stepped on toes and, you know, got their hands burned. I think John, this is what happened to John. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and, you know, two and two don't add up. So, in the meanwhile, he's still paying for it.
Was he investigating what were supposedly UFO crashes?
Yes, he was.
Oh, okay.
And he's known for two. One, the Santa Mauritius crash in 1989, and another, I think it was 92, and the South Haven crash retrieval, or 94, I'm not sure. It's going way back. But that was right not too far from Brookhaven Laboratories on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of speculation, you know, that we could get into. Make a long story short, I spoke with John, and apparently he hasn't even stood trial for for the crime, supposedly. He was to poison a politician down on Long Island and poison him and try to kill him. And this was the plot, supposedly. And, you know, they threw him in jail and threw away the key. And, you know, it was a political fury that was going on that he was involved with. And, you know, that's how the story goes. You know, there's a lot of stuff that came out of that, you know, dealing with politics and with power struggles. But, you know, I never got involved with that. I never will. I never have. I stay neutral. And
Is he still away?
Yes, he's still in the state prison. And the reason why he called me, he asked me if I would be a character reference for him, you know, when he comes to trial again. And apparently they're looking in March and April, you know, to get a trial up for him, or, you know, have him go through a trial, or at least offer him something. But I don't know exactly what it is. But, you know, I told John that whatever support I could, I'd give to him. And I have to say that I know John, and I knew him for years, and I knew his mother for years. So a very nice woman who was part of the organization, too. And,
how long ago was this, George?
I'm going back in the early 90s. In the early 90s, I was involved with a few organizations, but I had my own research going on with UFO abductees. And for 4 or 5 years, I had private groups, private sessions, where only abductees would come. And I had a hypnotherapist that would work with me. And we handle a few cases, and I handle a few cases. And, in fact, the Santa Maria's crash on Long Island in 89, I ended up being one of the investigators that went out to inspect the site and actually find the site. It was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed myself. But, you know, I've moved on since then, but I've always kept the UFO field active in my own way. And, of course, you know, studying ancient civilizations of antiquity, it all had to do with UFOs. And you have to understand, I believe in UFOs. And, you know, poor John, you know, he knows there's UFOs, and he had evidence and so forth. A lot of stuff, a lot of good information. But, you know, it just doesn't, it just didn't work back then. But
now,
maybe,
tell me,
you know.
Now, tell me, was he married? Did he have a family? Did he have a job?
Well, no, John wasn't married. He lived with his mother in Bellport, Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he had a couple he had a sister and a brother. I don't know where. I don't think he had close contact with them. But he lived with his mother, and in the meanwhile, he took on starting this UFO group. And it grew and it grew, and he was a court officer in the Suffolk County court systems, judicial court systems. And what happened is, I believe that he retired. He had somewhat of an early retirement because of a disability that he had. But he retired, and it was right after he retired, I guess, where this went down and they threw him in jail. And as far as I know, he lost everything. The only thing he was able to keep was a retirement pension that he was involved with for years. But his house, his savings, everything that he had was gone. They took the house and they auctioned it off. And I really felt bad for him. You know, of course, I have to say, too, about 8 months or so before this happened, his mother died. And he was all by himself. You know, there's a lot of stories and things floating around. In fact, I have to say that Preston Nichols, that we've talked about on this program, was involved with some of the activities, I think, with John as an investigator. Preston had a lot of meters and electronic equipment that you know, he could follow the movements of different magnetic energies and ELF waves and so forth. You know, I don't want to get into technical aspects of that, But I know Preston was involved with John for years.
Boy, that's a very sad story, though, George.
Yeah, it is. Hey, look, at if you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. But this is just one example of that. But I think, Lila, I think time, it's, what, 16 years since this went down. I think it's time to just let things get on with people's lives. And I think John should get on with life. You know, even though he can't get back what he's lost, but, hey, geez, he's just a guy, and, you know, trying to make a buck and go out on Friday and have an ice cream cone every once in a while, you know? But maybe with all this time, pressure will ease up, and fate will, you know, get him out of there. And I whatever I could do to help him, you know, I'm there as a good Christian man. But I'll keep in touch with him, and I have to speak with his lawyer. And what I will do is I'll keep up to date with his activities, and I will be seeing him in the next week or two. And maybe I can get some word from him and pass it on to you. But whoever's interested, I should say. But
are you going to go?
Yeah, I just wanted people to know that he is there. And I think this year he had a letter that came out, but it was very vague. But all I can tell you is this is what's coming out of this spring, which hopefully is a new trial or a trial.
So are you going to go and visit him?
Oh yeah, well he's a little over an hour from my house, and I've seen him before, or visited him I should say, and you know it's nice surroundings, you know it's not what you think it is, you know, in a penitentiary, but it's a hospital, and it was nice to see him, and it's Mid Hudson Valley, Mid Hudson.
Well, he'll have a hearing. That's what he'll have.
Well, that's what he's trying to get at this point, because they wouldn't even charge him before. They found him incompetent.
Yeah, well, that's right. He'll either have a hearing, and then if he's competent, he'll stand trial.
Yeah.
Whatever. I guess. And then, you know, he never even had a trial. Or if he's never had a trial and they incarcerated him, you know, they put him there. I think that's very odd. Usually you have a trial and you're declared incompetent and then they send you away. They must have had something.
Well, all I can tell you is that the whole political party that had office in Suffolk County there, I guess, has changed. And, of course, the district attorney who went after him, I mean, he's dead. And a lot of other people died. You know, it's like a long, long time ago. And maybe, you know, what they can do is just, you know, just drop everything, let him go, and, you know,
have a hearing,
maybe John
him
won't fight him or anything, you know, or they're probably going to be asked to cross-suing where John would sue them back, you know, for what he lost. But who knows? I don't know. I don't know how these things work.
I hope the poor guy is able to have a life.
Yeah, well, he wanted me to contact some people that were involved with cable TV, I think, on Long Island, Queens. And I don't think he realizes the extent of the media and even the cable TVs, because I used to do a lot of radio, and with him also. The Joel Martin Show is just one example. But it's an altogether different world than what it was in 1995. 1996, altogether different, and information now is instantaneous. You know, it's like I had a lot of. There was about 4 or 5 years ago, A&E I think came to me or one of the producers, and they were looking information on John Ford and also for the South Haven crash retrieval. And what I had to do is I had to go through my my notes and files, you know, going back for those years, you know, and bring out the files and information that I had, and which I did. I mean, some of that stuff is personal, but there's a lot of other notes that, like newsletters and so forth, that I got from the organization, and also press releases. And I've made a few news releases, I think, to a few UFO conferences, you know, in the Eastern Seaport here, you know, mentioning John's John's work and some of his doings and so forth. But, you know, just to keep up with the activity that was going on at that time here in New York, New Jersey, and Long Island.
Well, I hope he has more friends than just you to speak out for him. That would be good. I hope that happens for the guy.
Well, you know, it's funny how things have changed, and the cycle, I guess, is coming out or coming up where, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, he may get the hell out of there. And that makes me feel good. But, you know, Leo, we were talking this week about some of the changes that emotionally, you know, we can go through and we have been going through. And I think it's just part of this change that we're experiencing, change in consciousness. It's a split in consciousness. How about you, Layla?
Well, I've been so busy at work that I haven't had time to think about much of anything. As soon as I got back to work, I'm just like hit the pavement running. So
yeah.
I've been extremely busy. I haven't had too much time to reflect on things, really. I'm just doing. That's kind of where I am. But I left work right before Christmas in the same mode and had that vacation and just picked right back up as soon as we came back.
That's good.
Yeah. But I don't know whether it is or not. I just kind of, you know, hit the ground running, and that's the way it's been. That's the way it's been all year, though.
Yeah.
You know, from September when school started, it was like that. And it seems like there isn't very much time for reflection. You're on to things. You solve one problem, you're on to another one, and another one. It just seems to be how it is. I don't know. Don't have very much free time is what I'm telling you.
Well, that doesn't matter. The fact that we're splitting consciousness here is what we were going to talk about tonight. And I really, really think that's happening, George. I really do.
On a personal level, you know, I know it's happening to me, but you know, it's just unique. It's different. That's all. I'm not used to this, but
into the Looney Tunes that been there with Johnny because we're John Ford because or Alzheimer's or something. But I think what's happening is this happening everywhere, and people are seeing it. I mean, it's happening to them. They probably don't understand it quite well, but I think for the most part, people are separating. Their third dimensional existences are shattered. I mean, especially in the United States, where you have 50% people are living below poverty, or in poverty. Their world, their livelihoods, their everything is shattering. So everything that's all part of this unity consciousness that we're going through. And people are beginning to realize that, you know, the American dream was an illusion, you know, just an illusion, you know, and that's what it is.
I wouldn't say that, Leo.
I think it is, George. I think it is.
Leo's saying that over 50% of the people in the United States are in poverty, so over 50% of the people don't have the American dream.
And it's rising. I mean, the only people that seem to have an American dream, okay, are that 1%, all right, because the other 50% are still struggling. And, you know, I don't know, George. It takes something like a massive depression to shatter people's illusions of their lives. And, I mean, when you're living 200% in debt, that wealth is an illusion. It's not real. You know, you're going to owe it one day. And that's what's happening.
It's all an illusion, Leo. What are you talking about?
Well, it's all an illusion, George, but, you know.
The reality is when you don't have a job and you don't have a house and you don't know where your next meal is coming from, that is not an illusion when you're hungry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a reality.
And when you don't have a place to live anymore, that's a reality. And when you have to live in a bus or you have to live in a tent and or you live in your car, and that's how you take your kids to school in the car, and you stop at a gas station to wash them up and change them. That's a reality. That's not an illusion, George.
All right. Let
no.
Let me.
That's three-dimensional reality, I guess.
We have to break away from that, and maybe I think this is causing us to
break away from that. And how would you break away from that?
Well, George, you're breaking away from it as you create your reality. But
okay, you know, all right, let's stop right there for a minute.
But once you're off the grand illusion, okay, then you have to face facts that you are wherever your circumstances are led you. And
now, let's stop where you said before, it's all an illusion, okay?
Yep.
Now, let's just stop there for a minute. Understand how we perceive things in our consciousness. When I said split our consciousness, you know, we are locked into this duality because, you know, this is what we're born into. Alila, you said three-dimensional reality. Understand, that's where that's what we're involved with. I mean, our whole life thinking is duality. Now, understanding that the process for life comes from the heart. The heart is the organ that it designates what is what. And you have two different connections with the heart. I mean, direct communications with the head. And I'm jumping through this very quick, but understand that in the upper chambers of the heart, it's connected with the right chamber of the brain, and
right.
Basically that's the feminine feminine aspects, which is the emotional aspect of the brain. Now, the lower sections of the heart itself is you have a direct chamber that hooks right to the hypothalamus, which in that you have the pineal gland. Now, I have to jump back to the heart for a minute and understand. All the feelings from the heart are emotional feelings. Now, emotional feelings that goes to the brain, the right brain, is locked within a duality. So you can think one thing, you know, a good thing and so forth, but understand you're going to be hit by the backside of the opposite of that. You can't get away from that. And, you know, I talked years ago about magic and so forth, you know, when a warlock or somebody places a spell on you, they'd also put a spell on you and put a spell on something else because if that spell ricochets, it will come back to you, and that's what I'm talking about in the back of your head, or it will go to wherever else it's directed. So I'm saying instead of thinking of animals, think of rocks or think of something physical, you know, but not to take life. But understand, this is what happens with our thinking. So if we think now with our heart, which is connected with the hypothalamus, as you understand, that's the gland right between the two halves of the brain. And what you do is that you're directing the illusion in front of you from your emotion, from your heart, not from your thinking. So if you come from your heart, you're not gonna have to worry about the polarity of good and bad, of right or wrong. So that is one of the connections that connects us with the unity consciousness, where there is no right or wrong, and it's all one force. And that basically is what the heart is hooking into. And that one force is a one force that you focus into, either with the chakras and your kundalini, or with the pineal gland itself, which is right in the center of the brain, which is really an eyeball looking up. And we can get into the biology of this, but I don't want to spend the time on it. But understand, you have two ways of creating the illusion. The illusion with a positive and negative, or a good and a bad aspect, or you can create the illusion without having to go through the duality. And, you know, it's an option that we have, and I think it's the option right now, which is part of this Christ consciousness, which brings us back to the whole. And, you know, in the heart itself is where everything that you see on the outside of the world is on the inside of that heart. And what you're seeing, you are you were imagining your reality in your heart and also in your mind. So it's which one you want to keep, the linear one or the emotional one. And that's the choice that we have, and we've been locked into this linear way of life for 12,000 years. Now it's time to break away and go back to the heart, or go back to the emotional body, which is controlling the whole body, not just different aspects of it.
Do you see that happening? Do you feel that change, George, yourself?
Yeah, I think that's what we're experiencing right now. I think we're experiencing two sides. I was laughing at, the things that are happening, is that we are, there is an illusion now who is telling us about the illusion. What do you call the no-name group?
The no-name group. Anonymous?
That came out the first of the year. They wear the mask?
Yeah, anonymous.
Oh, no, excuse me. Okay, the anonymous. You have anonymous people through the illusion of that, exploiting the illusion they're trying to expose. So, it's like you're using illusion to expose the illusion, and that's what we're talking about right now. It's exposing the consciousness for what it is, not for what we've made it. So,
but you're saying that anonymous is an illusion that's fighting the illusion.
Well, it is. It's not that it is. It is. That's what's happening.
Yeah,
you
but George,
two different illusions fighting one another, but one's exposing the other.
Yeah, but George, talk to the Occupy Wall Street people who got the 700 of them who got arrested, or the ones who got kicked out of the park.
All right, that's just the casualties of that way of thinking, Leo. But if you take a look at it, that's what's happening. You can't say anything else about it, because it actually is an illusion of people hiding, fighting that illusionary government or powers that some call the Federal Reserve and yada yada yada. But you see, it's all an illusion, Leo, and that's what's breaking down. And we've been talking about that part of this Mayan understanding
to a large extent. But the problem is, when you're fighting,
See, I don't think it's illusion. I think it's they're fighting illusions, but what they feel is real.
No doubt about it. I'm not saying that those illusions are not real. They are real. Just like the illusions, our life is real too. But understand, it's an illusion that we're seeing because we're putting it together. We're drawing it toward ourselves.
Yeah, I see that part, definitely, but it doesn't lessen the pain, that's for sure.
Well, it's a matter of how serious you take. Sometimes I tell Leo, don't take it so serious, we all have a garbage sandwich we have to eat and take a bite from every now and then, but,
Not that right.
I'm sorry.
You're clear about that, George. Yep.
Okay, so.
But it's true.
This is the split consciousness that I'm referring to, that it's opening up for us, and they call this another form, another way of ascension, where a person can ascend his consciousness from his heart to the thalamus and be radiated out through the pineal gland, pituitary gland.
Right.
And, you see with holy pictures of the halo.
Right.
Around a saint's head and so forth. And understand, that is the ascension of, they're able to move their spirit to their head, to their head chakras. And that is the illumination of your head chakras that connect to the ground, the crown chakra. So that is the major step before we would transfer over, or we shift into higher consciousness, or the fourth dimensional reality. We become pure light. So understand that this is part of the process of ascension, and this is things that I'm just tapping into, where I've never really thought about it in this way, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And even the thalamus is actually a black hole, but I don't want to get into that. And that black hole is that connection that we have, with with other light forms, or you know, with light itself, because it's all one light.
Well, on the other hand, speaking of light, have you noticed that the moon is almost full?
Yeah, it's pretty.
You know, it's funny. You know, you talk about an illusion today. I went to the store this afternoon, and I got out, and there was a when I drove up to the store. The skies are being chemtrail pretty heavily today.
Very heavily here.
And this old guy with a beard gets out, kind of a rickety old truck, and I didn't know him or anything, but he steps out and he looks up in the sky, and he waves his fist and yells,
yeah.
fuck you. And I was looking at him going, what is he? And he was looking straight up in the sky, you know. And I looked up and I saw, and he was yelling at the chemtrail bastards that were, yeah. And it made me laugh because I've done that all the time under my breath. I've never said it, you know what I mean?
Out loud.
But there was this guy who, you know, the last guy who would expect it to do that, gets out of his truck, looks up in the sky, looks at the stuff and just, you know, shakes his fist at him.
Did you speak with him?
No, I didn't. But I understood his anger, and he just kind of walked into the store. But it was like, you know, for the first time, I actually saw somebody
react to it.
You know what I mean? When so many people just ignore it, you know, I react to it. Johnny Brennan reacts to it. We all do. But, you know, to stand there by yourself and to just shake your fist, you know, in public at that, I don't know. Most people would have called it crazy probably, but I said right on, you know. And that's not an illusion, George. That's real.
Keeping it alive.
What's that?
Yes, but you're keeping it alive.
What am I keeping alive? It's there.
You're keeping it alive.
I can't do anything about it. We've tried. God knows we've tried.
But you are doing something about it by connecting to the consciousness or thinking about it. You're giving it power, my friend.
Well,
the idea, the concept.
I agree with you, George, to an extent, but I'll tell you the truth. I mean, just by ignoring it.
There's no extent.
Right.
Either you are or you're not. And you are, because you hold on to that and hold on to the anger that connects with that. So, you know, you're just hopping or feeding the fire. That's all you're doing.
Well, let me give you an example. For the last couple of hundred years, the Illuminati have been alive and plotting and developing and gaining power. And people didn't know about them, and they gained tremendous power. Now
they kept ignoring them,
and they got no attention,
and
they've become bigger and stronger and more powerful. And for the most part, just a few people pay attention to it, and they become extremely powerful.
And have taken over the world. So you know, and all the crap that's happening in this world is essentially because of them. And because not only because of them, but of course because
just
of the,
just
they
own a few, all the corporations, a few
they
families, own, really.
Yeah, but they own all the corporations. They, mm-hmm. you know, they've just, they, you know.
So I'm wondering.
These are the things that disturb me, and this is why I can't totally break away from this consciousness. Because, and even as much as I would love to, but
why not,
it still
Leo?
Leaves me here. All right, and my head may be in the clouds, but my body is still here. And,
all right, let's break for a minute if we can. What if we can compensate for all this all this pollutions in this chemtrails?
Mm-hmm.
What if we could take care of, we could clean it up?
That'd be fabulous.
All right, what if, better yet, we can clean ourselves up so it wouldn't affect us?
That'd be fabulous.
All right, so who's to say that we can't do that?
Well, if that is possible, it's not being released to the majority of people.
Well, who would release something like that other than it's actually the DNA or the people that it affects have changed. You know, it's like I've talked about this before. We have genes in our DNA that stretches to the moon and back seven times. But we have, I believe, coatings within our genes that would compensate our DNA to any type of outside influence. I mean, you know, it's like bears, they have the gene for hibernating, and we have the same gene, but it's not activated. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying we found life forms that will adapt to conditions that would kill them. And they were able to do so by manipulating their DNA, and this is something they did internally, not by an outside source, and they were able to live and strive. So I'm just saying, who's to say that we can connect with, you know, our own DNA and our own self and change and put into action things that we need to survive? So I'm saying that what if we could just turn off the or put the filters on these chemtrails and they wouldn't affect us, but see them for the majesty and for what they are. Now, I remember a couple of years ago, a friend of mine was saying, oh, look at that. They're marking for the bombing, you know, the bombing runs. And, you know, I thought it was hilarious or humorous at the time. But, you know, there's different ways you could look at that. So I'm saying that we can adapt to any kind of pollutants. And I think that we might be able to do that, and if we're not doing it already. And I'm talking about the younger people that are being grown right now, because it's the fact that their DNA is changing, or it's different than, let's say, the generation before or the generation before that.
But, you know, George, you know, I have to agree with you to the extent that we can change that, but the problem that I have is that the bastards are doing it, and for us to have to go through a DNA change to avoid it, when all we have to do, okay, is take a shotgun to the sons of bitches' heads, okay, and blow the fuck 'em away.
Now, Leo, where that illusion thing comes in.
Anywhere.
Have some compassion, my friend. You can do it without doing that.
Why am I going to change my DNA and wait for 20 generations, all right, and everybody die of Alzheimer's and every god-awful cancer and everything else because these sons of bitches are spraying the skies with poisons, polluting the waters with poisons, polluting our foods with poisons. And I'll tell you what, as soon as people understand this shit, all right, and more people do, then God damn it, those people that are poisoning us will die, all right, and we will live. And I think the world is going to come, I fight constantly with this concept of peace, love, and bullshit, okay, when everybody is still pissing and shitting on everybody else. That's bullshit, all right? I'm not going to eat piss and or drink piss and eat shit the rest of my life. No.
Lila, Lila.
DNA says it.
Leo, take it easy, my friend.
It's still shit, all right? And shit is shit. And this is what we have to deal with. And
time out for a minute. For years about even with the 9/11 and what happened there. You know, there's a bad aspect of that, and there's a good aspect of that, and that's with everything. And that's what I was talking about before, about the emotional, mental rights of part of the brain. You know, with that comes the negative aspects also. But, you know, I always focus, if I can, on the good aspect of something, because you could find good just as well as bad. And if nothing else, understanding this of feeling emotions coming from the heart, there's nothing that I have to worry about dilute it or to compensate it.
I agree with you that there's a good and a bad. But
it's where you put
it. But I can't agree with
an illusion
somebody.
Because you're creating that.
Yeah, but I'm not creating the fact that somebody's actually out there killing somebody else.
You're creating your mind to look at that and take focus on it and add to it.
Why should I accept that? Why should I accept that? And just ignore
that's my point.
The fact that the guy is going to kill me. Why?
What you do, Leo, is you get in your car and leave. Then he won't kill you.
No, it's
you
like
don't have
it's
to
like
stay in that situation.
That
you got to leave.
Missouri or where, or Oklahoma. Okay, a poor 18-year-old girl with a baby. And
you're right, Leo. But you know, let's be practical about this. You know,
One minute. Okay, here's an 18-year-old girl just lost her husband through cancer. Okay, she's sitting there with a brand new baby, and you got two goddamn gorillas trying to break down her door. All right, one guy breaks down the door. Okay, with a knife in his hand. She's got a shotgun in her hand. And she blows the bastard away. Good for her. Okay? This is the way it should be. Okay? You know, if
no,
some
it
guy
shouldn't
attacks...
Be. They shouldn't have tried to break into
what are you
her house.
Ignore
Dave
him?
Is right.
Oh, he doesn't exist?
Don't make it wrong, Leo.
Oh, no. You know, George,
okay, let George respond to that.
Well, I wasn't quite finished saying my side. And I was saying, you know, that to me, George, is hard reality. Okay, this girl was faced with hard reality. What do you do? And you know what? I don't think there's anybody in the country, okay, who didn't say, good, I'm glad she blew the bastard away. All right? So, you know, I don't know, defend that. I try to defend that, George. I don't see any defense as how she got down on her knees and prayed to the bastard, all right, and prayed to God to, you know, save me, save me, save me. God did save her. He gave her a shotgun and a nerve to blow the guy away. Yeah, you know. So
she was justified in what she did.
She was justified, absolutely. You know?
Listen, I agree. She was justified in what she did. But
yeah.
I feel sorry that she didn't have more options to deal with, because it's a hell of a thing. I mean, you know, you can't put a baby between a mother and somebody who wants to harm you. I don't care who the hell you are, you know.
Yeah,
a woman
right.
doesn't do that. Lila, you agree with that, right there?
She just had to leave the room.
Well, you know, it's she was justified in protecting
right.
herself.
I don't care.
But
I'm just sorry
that it had to be under those circumstances.
That's
you know,
you put her.
And I'm sorry. I'm glad that it's not an average of thing that happens every day. I mean, you know, it's a shame. But, you know, those fellas, hey, look, at if you want to play with a bull, you're going to get the horns, and that's what happened.
That's right. And Lila, I mean, George was just saying, you know, what would you have done in that case? You put a woman in, you put a baby, you know, up, you know, you put
a
woman.
You want a shotgun.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was, too.
Well, I can't say that. First of all, I'd never have a gun, because let me finish, Leo.
Yeah.
Don't try to answer
sorry.
For me.
Sorry.
I can answer for myself. First of all, I wouldn't have a gun. I'll tell you that, because I don't feel comfortable with them, and my problem would be is I would hesitate, because I'm not a gun person. And if you have a gun, you have to be sure that you're going to use it, and I'm not that kind of person. What would I do in that circumstance? I just don't know what I would do. I have a great deal of trouble thinking about taking a human life, but the protection of my child would certainly come first. And I don't know what I'd do in her circumstance.
It's not like a different world where she is.
No,
I mean, where you have a gun above the, you know, above the fireplace, you know, just for coyotes or whatever at night. It's a shame that people have to use them for protection from one another, but that's the way they are, and I'm sure she knew how to use it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how to use one, so it would be a mistake for me to try to. I couldn't even put myself in that position, because I've never lived like that. And
as a Christian man, I just wish there was more options for her to play with or deal with. But, there's a reason for everything, and I'm sure some good will come out of this, no doubt in my mind. But, I was talking about that sandwich before with garbage in it. Every once in a while, you got to take a bite.
That's
right.
I mean, that's where I have a hard time separating myself, is between, you know, self-preservation, all right, and... you know, this Christhood where you're willing to kill yourself to save for nothing, all right? And essentially, that's what it amounted to. I mean, yes, he made a statement when he was crucified and allowed himself to be so, but, you know, what did it accomplish? It's hard to say. And then
it accomplished his passion gave us the ability for compassion. So, you know, it's having compassion for situations like this and for people, you know. It's
but his word, but when you think about it, George, his actual, the Christ word, the Christ work would have been obsolete, would have been totally forgotten, all right, had it not been for the brutal,
not the
crucifixion, but the brutal Roman Empire, massacring the Christians, okay, and then for the Roman Empire to convert their entire country to Christianity, okay, and enforce Christianity through their brutality, okay, and create the church, and the church became an army within itself, all right, and went out and persecuted people,
it's a financial army.
So now it's got financial army and God knows what, but the thing is that what I'm saying is Christ's work would have ended, all right, many, 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 many thousands of years ago, 2,000 years ago, all right, had it not been for the Roman people or the Roman Emperor Constantine picking up the religion and carrying it forward and brutalizing, you know, the entire known world to convert.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Leo, but I understand what you're saying, but if you go back, before Constantine got his hands into it, I mean, you had the Cossack Christians out of Egypt and the Essenes, and there was these other groups that held on to the basic belief, and that is not with power, but it's through understanding, it's through salvation, that is through the passion
that
the compassion for us in unity.
What I see is, despite all the history of brutality and all that, which is the bastardization of the Word of God, and the way I see the Bible is, it shows us in the New Testament is a good and healthy way to live if you can achieve it, and shows you what can happen through loving and caring for others. And if you can
that's the whole aspect of ascension. What we're talking about here is that the Christ consciousness was put for us to come back to the heart and start thinking with the heart, not with a brain. And that's where we closed ourselves off from the world. So the Christ consciousness was connecting us with the unity consciousness, the outside world, and it's through the heart that we can ascend and to other dimensions of reality, which we're experiencing right now. It's through the heart that the Christian concept the concept of salvation, I should say, was put in motion. And we have found the way, and, you know, it's been 12,000, 15,000 years where we've actually openly practiced this type of consciousness. And that's what's opening up to us. We're going back to things that we've known we've done before. And we are just spiraling now back up the ascending dimensional ladder that we came down from. So this is nothing new to us. We've experienced this before. So we do know the way, but you got to close your eyes and just let your heart take you. And I do believe that is what's happening. You know, if we just hold fast to our thinking, it will happen, and it's happening so fast now, and I'm just letting myself go. You know, for so long, I used that brain aspect of looking for my miracles, but
yeah.
I think it was from the first of the year, it was like not a calling in a sense, but I'm able now to stop the world when I want to and just take a look at what's around me, and it's amazing. You know, I'll stop the world when I'm in a restaurant or something, and I'll just see people standing, and all I see is their eyes blinking. That's all I see. It is like these are all different individual beings, And if nothing else, I am there in the moment. And, you know, that is there's new realities that I'm seeing, and it's just part of my heaven. You know, heaven is not something at the end of my rainbow. Heaven is
something. Well, George, all you have is the moment, and that's the best that there is.
There you go. But, you know, it's a it's like a constant thing. I was at a party, and they had the Christmas candles on a tree. And it's an old German habit or routine or whatever you would call it. Anyways, they would have lit candles on the tree.
Right.
And, you know, you would only light it once, and it would last maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. But in Germany, this is how they used to experience and share Christmas on Christmas Eve with a Christmas tree and open gifts. But over the years, you know, we don't do that with our Christmas tree. We didn't. But, you know, you lose the freshness and, you know, the sparkle of it. And, you know, it's we all become complacent. Now, I became complacent. But it was good for me just to stop for a minute and enjoy the beauty of the moment. And, you know, I have to understand the Christmas tree, there's different folklores that we were told, and one of them was, a Finnish folklore, where they used to go out, and under the evergreen trees used to grow mushrooms. Mushrooms that would illuminate the mind. And what they did is it was a practice that every winter they would collect these mushrooms, and on the first of the year they would make tea. And the whole family would sit down and drink tea together and wish in the new year. So,
were they psychedelic mushrooms?
Sure.
Without a doubt, dear. So understand that is part of the understanding of the Christmas tree, and also the Pope and the clergy wearing helmets that look like fish. They look like fish, but they also look like mushrooms. So if you go back to some of these earlier religions and the Tower of Babel, I think they had mushroom head type of priest costumes. But you know, I don't mind me. But you know, this basically is something that's grown out of this. And
well, they claim now that manna was actually mushrooms.
Yeah, I could see that. I could understand. Yeah, sure.
Makes so much sense that the psilocybin is a psilocybin mushroom. Gives you that provides this
psychedelic high.
Well, it's even more so. It gives you an extreme.
It's a natural high.
Yeah, if you've ever had them, and I'm sure George, you probably experimented.
I've had plenty of mushrooms, yeah.
And they're
in my older days.
Yeah, they're very wonderful things. They, you know, it's more of a very pleasant natural high, probably even more so. I would say more so than weed or mescaline. It was a very interesting experience, and
unique experience, and
it also went very well with bourbon, if I recall. And
Carlos Castaneda's had an initiation from Don Juan with mushrooms, and it was in his earlier series and his earlier tales. If nothing else, it opens up those codexes, if you want to call it that. It's like, the 60s, by the codexes, I mean computer programs within the DNA. By experiencing something like that, what you've done is that you've let down you've activated some of those chromosome genes that you have in your body, and it's like experiencing chocolate for the first time. You'll never not experience chocolate like you did beforehand. You know, and that's what happens when mushrooms. It opens up the senses, and so that's what they used to do on New Year's, Christmas time.
That's kind of a cool tradition.
I thought it was, but I don't think my wife would go for that.
You don't think so?
No. Even though she is German, 100%, you know, but...
I think we might...
Oh, well. How do we get on talking about mushrooms? What's next?
It's called
it was a lovely season, I guess.
I guess so, huh?
Yeah. Somebody just called in, George. Yeah, let's see who it is. Good evening, 907. Hello.
Good morning, guys. Or good afternoon, I should say. My morning.
Who are you?
Excuse me?
What's your name?
Tim from Anchorage.
What?
Tim from Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh.
Yes, how you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great to hear you, hear from you. So what's your take on what George has been talking about?
Excuse me?
I said, what did you think about the conversation? What do you think?
What's your view?
What's your view? Yeah.
Okay, well, my view was, you know, I kind of been listening to this since I was a young kid in the late 60s, early 70s. And my dad was in the military, and we had friends that were in the military, and some of his friends were in the Secret Service, and so I've kind of been hearing about this, and then later on in the mid-70s, my older brother started talking to me about, you know, the Illuminati and the dollar bill and all this stuff. So I've kind of, you know, I'm 45 now, but I've known about it most of my life. And it's kind of funny. I remember when militias started coming back in the mid-70s. And early 80s, and nothing happened, so everyone kind of just blew it off as crazy conspiracy talk, right? And but slowly, if you look back at the history, they kept moving two steps forward, one step back, you know, so they're always going forward a little bit. But now it's just like crazy what they're doing. And so now I'm kind of looking at it, I'm more like, what exactly do they actually have to do other than molest you going through the mall or the airport before people actually decide not to be passive and to actually physically take back? Because if you try to, and I'm sure they have, my whole life I've seen people try to recall city councilmen and recall the mayor and stuff. Nothing ever happened. The judge throws the case up. So it never gets to an election, it never gets on the ballot, it never goes anywhere. So if you actually physically try to kick these people out of office, I think everyone would find out they'd just be fired upon. They would just be considered criminals and they'd be shot.
No,
so actually, what I'm saying to the people of your show who are listening is, exactly what does the government have to do before you actually get off your butt and do something?
That's the... But I have to say that Wisconsin did recall five of its senators, all right, and now they have a petition now to recall the governor, Walker, all right. So that did work for some. That worked for Wisconsin, and they're still trying to get 500,000 ballots. Not ballots, half
signatures.
A million signatures. I think they only need 100,000 more to get Walker recalled. So this does work, you know, but you need
someone to lead that process.
Yeah, and the reason that Wisconsin was so powerful in doing it was because, I mean, you had all of the public unions pissed off at them, all right? And they were trying to stop their collective bargaining, but that was a perfectly legal process. Yeah, and they recalled, like in California, when they did the recall in 2004.
Schwarzenegger stepped in.
Yeah, and they got Schwarzenegger. Not that that was a great deal, but they did recall the current governor. All right, so these things do happen,
and they do work.
And it's just you need to rally around that cause and promote it as much as you can. I don't know. I mean, that's why unions and these other great, so many groups who can mobilize so many people, that's very important. And I think we can do it. But what you're saying is we can't get, you know, trying to get enough people off their asses or even waking up to the fact that they're getting mauled, It's like we're getting destroyed, you know, getting beat up constantly by this system, and the system's getting worse. and there's not much we can do. Now, George, I don't know how you explain this to him, but if by just ignoring it, doesn't go away, it gets worse. And I'd like to believe that we could just make it go away, but you know, unfortunately, it takes in this dimension, in the third dimension, we have to do third dimensional things, and that takes force and planning and a great deal of effort, you know.
Yeah, but I think we have options available or opening up for us that we can take that are more less stressful. So I'm just looking for the right options to show itself, and you know, it's a matter of how much time. It's a waiting game, I guess, we're playing. Just like I wish there was some kind of intervention that would take care of some of the financial problems and the medical problems we're having. And, you know, maybe that's in the stars, and maybe that's an option that's going to fill itself maybe this year. I don't know.
Well,
we do
have an answer for the financial problems, and that's develop our own bank. And that,
Well, something's got to fit. The Federal Reserve's got to fall first, and that's what's happening now.
Now, that's why, as Leo so carefully has pointed out, that's why Germany is one of the few solvent countries in Europe, because they have their own bank.
It's really the only solvent country
in
Europe.
And that's why North Dakota, in our country, that state of North Dakota, they have a state bank, and they have very little unemployment, and people are doing fine there.
And it's the only really solvent state in the country.
In the Union.
You know, so this is a way that you know, we have to develop this kind of mindset that the people.
We do have the answers to our problems.
Yeah, I mean, once you get it out of the hands of the minority, once you get it out of the hands of the 1%.
There are many, many solutions.
And you realize, and that's why Occupy Wall Street was important, because it was part of this unity consciousness that we've been talking about for years, George, is it's breaking away.
But it's
the physical presence of millions and millions of people that will make the difference.
Who are on the same way.
It's not the physical emails, okay, although those work, all right, but it's the millions of people marching down, congregating into Washington, D.C., going into the White House, taking over the building, throwing these bastards out, putting them in, demanding them in jail. This will do it, okay? I mean, if they called the entire army and the entire police force, okay, we would only have a couple million people, okay, to go against 300 million, all right? So, I mean, if even 30 million people in this country, 10% of this country woke up, all right, and stopped believing the propaganda and the bullshit and looked at what's really happening, they would dominate Washington, D.C. They'd dominate the media, and they would demand this. But the problem
they demand
is,
fair representation
but the problem
of fair
is,
government.
They're the activists in this country, like myself or Lila or people that are constantly pushing these issues, all right, and trying to bring them forward. Less than 1%. We're the 1%. Okay, we're the 1%. 3 million people in this country. It's 1%. You know what I mean? And there's not even maybe there's 3 million activists. Maybe, but more likely there's 300,000. Okay, activists
of people that are actually out there pushing the issue. The people that can make the difference are the people. Like who are at Occupy Wall Street, and the reason that they
some of them
the reason
but they're getting kicked
let,
around
let
they're
me,
getting thrown out.
Let me finish, Leo. The reason that they can make a difference, and I feel this is true, George, is because there are always more to fill their ranks. They're made up of young people for the most part under 30, who are unemployed, who are college graduates, who have huge debt, and who see no reason to do anything but try to fight for a better life for themselves.
That's right.
And when they're tired, there's a whole next generation of people who aren't going to have any jobs either.
And these are the same people that are fighting in Egypt, the same people that are fighting in all the countries that are revolting. But, you know, the difference
between
the United States and these other countries is that these other countries, these people are actually being killed and dying. The United States, well, they're getting arrested. They're getting pepper sprayed, but nobody's getting killed, all right? And, you know, but I don't know. It's going to take a massive physical demonstration, like they had in the civil rights and what they had in the 60s and the 70s.
They're building up to it.
And that's what it's going to take. And it wasn't until you had an entire country of people ready to blow up buildings and start fires and, you know, fight the police and fight everybody, okay, you know, for their rights, that you finally turned around the system, and the system turned.
But now
what happened is that whole group of activists either died, you know, from old age, or got fat and happy, okay, living a good life, and now
they became
the 1%.
Lieberman, who shows himself walking with Martin Luther King, became a real representative of the 1%.
Exactly.
So
Jerry Rubens, who was up there, before he died, he was a Wall Street broker, for crying out loud. But these are the things that happen. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name there. But what do you feel about that?
Well, I think that pushed it in the 60s. But judging by the history, someone just, on the sidelines watching it.
Can you move the microphone away from your mouth?
Inevitable. You know, you didn't solve anything. The same people stayed in office. They just stopped the war and they moved on to something else. But you didn't change anything.
We did, but you got
rid of Vietnam, but they moved on to other wars, another thing.
Better, yes.
That's all. But the same people stayed in power.
They didn't move on until they really didn't move on until until the Bush boys came back in, all right, and that was a problem. That's where you had it, and this hawkish Reagan-esque Bush and even Clinton. I mean, then you did have a problem. But what happened was during the 60s and 70s was you had a draft, okay?
People had nothing to lose by protesting.
Yeah, you were either going to go to war and get killed, or you're going to go in the streets and get beat up. I took the streets to be beat up over the war to get killed, okay?
What is the caller's name, Jeff?
I was looking at
him.
Jim.
Tim.
Oh, Tim. Okay, Tim. I was interested. You said you from Alaska or from Anchorage?
Yeah.
How do you find the earthquake activity up your way, my friend?
Well, we have, numerous earthquakes, little ones all over different areas every month. And Anchorage gets hit probably 4 or 5 times in the winter and maybe a little heavier in the summer. Small rollers, they don't last more than 10, 20 seconds.
Well, I've been watching some of the earthquake activity on the West Coast, especially around Oregon, and, I'm Vancouver, and, I was just a little concerned about the Aleutian Islands and, how it's the same fault, that's connected with Japan. So I just see a lot of activity through the websites here, and there's forever earthquakes going on up there.
Yeah.
You think?
We do have a lot of volcanoes, and the chain is primarily volcanoes.
What about the weather patterns, like from spring and winter? Are they basically pretty harsh or toned down?
Well, this has been a harsh winter. It's going to be one of the worst winters as far as snow since at least 1990. It's probably going to beat that year. That's when I came up to Anchorage in 92 or 1, and that was a bad winter. I mean, Valdez is getting snow days of 9 feet.
Oh. Wow, that's a lot of snow. But, you know,
they talk about the pole shift, the pole changes, you think you're affected by 9 feet of snow.
You think you're affected by the pole shift?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't, you know, it's funny. It seems it's getting colder, but we're going south, so we should be getting warmer. You know, and we are getting warmer. I mean, if you go up, it's not, the weather pattern's so different where I'm at because I'm surrounded by mountains. You know, I have mountains to the south of me, Chugach, and then I have the Alaskan mountains to the west of me, and the northern hills of Matsu Mountain Range, you know, north of me. So I'm in a bowl where I'm getting rain one day and I'm getting dumped on snow the next. So Anchorage is kind of weird. But everywhere else, you know, Valdez is getting hit really hard with snow. The south is Homer, and southeast Alaska has been warm. You know, they've been pretty warm lately, last few summers. I mean, like in the 90s, 100, you know. So the weather is changing.
Well, I was reading some statistics, and, you know, the North Pole is moving. I think it's moved since its last position was 1,800 miles. Compared to the movements of the South Pole, which has only moved 250 miles. And there's a hell of a difference from 1,800 to 250. You know, and I was trying to understand, you know, how that would happen. You know, of course, you would have some kind of a wobble to the Earth, but
yeah.
Kind of strange. Or 1,800 miles in the north and 300 miles on the south.
I think
what I've noticed about a lot of scientists is they're full of a lot of theories, and it's changed in my lifetime many times. So, you know, just when they think they have it, you know, figured out, you know.
Yeah.
You know what? They're wrong.
Well, thanks, Tim. I'm just curious.
Thank you very much.
I try to follow the earthquakes and the volcanoes and, you know, some of the earth changes that, you know, they talk about, you know, coming this time. And, you know, it was devastating what happened in Japan. And
going to be even more devastating is the radioactive material, flotsam and jetsam, floating our way, coming into our shores. And Alaska's being hit. We just had 79 seals wash ashore up at on the northern shores over above Nome,
yeah.
Kotzebue. And they all were losing their fur and had sores. And as soon as I saw it, I knew it was radioactivity.
Well,
San Francisco, shortly, within, I don't know, a couple of weeks after the earthquake, after the meltdown, San Francisco had 14,000 times the normal radioactive level on the groundwater, all right? 14,000 times the radioactive and if that was measured in San Francisco, I can't even imagine what it, there weren't ratings that went up to Alaska, but they also had just in Boston, Massachusetts, their groundwater was 800 times, all right, the safety level, all right, during that week, and this huge cloud of radioactive material just floated across the Pacific and across the North America, all right, and they found that it's even reached now it's reached Europe as well, and I just read recently that they are now leaking radioactive material into the ocean. Because of the they can't contain it, and so they're letting this out. Plus, there's something else that hasn't hit the West Coast yet, and that is 20 million tons of debris from that tsunami.
Exactly.
20 million tons of debris are floating. That they've actually seen it as floating, this way toward the West Coast. And what the hell is going to happen? Can you imagine 20 million tons of debris hitting the California shoreline. Oh my God!
Yeah, it's a nightmare coming this summer.
Yeah. We haven't begun to see it, the mess yet. So
there was
a
woman, Linda Cantrell, who wrote a book called.
Well, there you go, guys.
What's that?
Thanks for letting me call him.
Well, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm going to have to hang up. Thank you again for letting me call him.
Yeah,
all right. Well,
thanks
for calling, Tim. And call back again if you would.
Yeah, please do. All right. Good night.
You know, I wanted to mention to Tim that Linda Cantrell and The Greatest Story Never Told, a book that we talked about on this show.
Oh,
but
George,
Linda
yeah.
goes back in history with some of these ancient civilizations, and they had remedies for radiation poisoning and, you know, different foods and so forth, herbs to take that helped compensate for being radiated. So, you know, this has been around for a while, and I do believe that we will find a cure for this, Leo, and those poor damn seals. What are you going to do, you know?
George, there is a cure. I read about it recently. It's sea salt and sodium what's the stuff? Baking soda, right?
What?
Sea salt and baking soda, both are well-known cleansers for radiation, all right? And that's what we
have. Well, I think Mr. Clean better get his ass in gear and start getting this stuff on the market.
But
I slapped myself. I'm sorry.
Sea salt and baking soda, man. Those
there
two are what you need. Just get some baking soda and take some every day, I guess. So that's the only way we're going to solve this problem. But anyway, George, it's always a pleasure having you on. And geez, it was great to have somebody from Alaska call us.
That was great. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. And
keep you informed of what's going on with John Ford. And we'll announce this here. But I'll be seeing him probably next week or so. And hopefully I might have a report from him that, you know, I'll be able to read off or maybe play. I don't know. But, you know, I'll find out more and I'll let everybody know.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, George. So you have a good weekend and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Well, thank you. God bless you both.
Buddy, peace. Take care. And I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight and especially Tim from Alaska. We appreciate your call. And hope you enjoyed the show. So in the meantime, good night.